Okay, welcome everyone to another Tuesday afternoon here in America, and Tuesday evening in Scotland, Ireland, elsewhere in the EU. Welcome, Grant. First time I think you've been in this chat room. Hi, Chug. Moon Girl. Mark. Mom. Phyllis. Melissa. Everybody. I think Sarah's probably here too, maybe. I don't know. Annie and everyone else. Welcome to Cancel the Cabal on Shake and Wake Radio. I'm also on PSN Radio and SoFlo Radio. And all the stations are listener supported, so hit that donate button, please. If you can. And I'm going to continue reading on the real Anthony Fauci, Bill Gates, Big Pharma, and the global war on democracy and public health by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I think it's been, like 18 or 19 weeks now. Still getting through this long book. Still got quite a bit to go, too. I'm going to go back one paragraph to revisit a little bit. In other words, Gates's DTP vaccine, that gets diphtheria and something else, if I'm not mistaken. Instead of saving 10 million lives, as he claims, may have unsuccessfully, unnecessarily killed millions of African girls. At least 7 other studies have confirmed the DTPs associated with high mortality in vaccinated girls compared to unvaccinated. The idealistic Americans who donated to Gates's African vaccine project, believing they were saving African babies, were actually funding a continent-wide female genocide. After completing the study and verifying its shocking results, Peter Abbe, a virtual deity among African vaccine researchers, made an impassioned and remorseful plea to the WHO to reconsider the DTP vaccine. I guess most of you think that we know what our vaccines are doing, he said. We don't. Gates, the WHO, and Gavi ignored Abbey's appeal and redoubled their efforts to expand DTP vaccinations and to shore up support for the girl-killing jab. The Lancet published a commentary by the Gates Foundation, plenipotentiary Chris Elias, Dr. Anthony Fauci, and 3 apparatchiks from lesser Gates-founded consortia, WHO's Margaret Chan, UNICEF's director Anthony Lake, and Seth Berkley of Gavi, who portrayed their deadly African DTP program as a public health triumph. These charlatans proclaimed DTP as one of the bright spots in global well-being and gasconaded that more children are being immunized worldwide than ever before, with the highest level of routine coverage in history, as measured by coverage of 3 doses of the diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, DTP. That project also involved reputationally devoted Abbey as a defamation campaign. Sorry, with a defamation campaign. A subsequent expert review by the founder of the Cochrane Collaborative, Peter Goetsch, condemned the WHO's attempt to downplay the risk of DTP vaccine. The WHO, he observed, had been dismissive of studies finding detrimental non-specific effects for the DTP vaccine while accepting studies finding beneficial non-specific effects for the measles vaccine. The WHO is inconsistent and biased towards positive effects of vaccines. When a result pleases the WHO, it can be accepted. But not when a result does not please the WHO. Goetsch found the studies by Morganson and Abbey superior in every respect to the Gates-generated Lancet study. Gates and his WHO vassals continue to bully African nations into taking their lethal DTP vaccines by threatening to withdraw financial aid to their health departments and HIV programs if the government fails to achieve national uptake targets 90%. Mercury Rising. Many vaccines shipped to underdeveloped countries, including the hepatitis B, Haemophilus influenza type B, and DTP inoculations, contain bolus doses of mercury-based preservative and adjunct dimerosal. The immunity provisions of the 1986 Vaccine Act gave a blank check to the U.S. pharmaceutical companies to promote the mostly shoddy testing vaccines without consequences or cost. Pharma responded by a gold rush to add new lucrative vaccines to the schedule. And by 1991, mercury exposures to U.S. children from the vaccine preservative, thimerosal, had more than doubled. Parents, physicians, and researchers blamed a subsequent explosion of neurological and immune disease on thimerosal. Alarmed at the exploding epidemics of neurodevelopment, allergic and autoimmune diseases in children that began in 1986, CDC commenced in 1999 an in-house study of the vast repository of health and vaccination data from the 10 largest HMOs stored in the Vaccine Safety Data Link. A specifically assembled CDC research team led by Belgian epidemiologist Thomas Verstraeten compared health outcomes in hundreds of thousands of vaccinated versus unvaccinated children. The raw data from CDC's 1999 Verstraeten study showed that children who took thimerosal-containing hepatitis B vaccines in their first 30 days suffered an astonishing 1,135% higher rate in autism than children who did not. Verstraeten also documented a grim inventory of other neurological injuries, including ADD, ADHD, speech and language delays, tics, sleep disorders, and children exposed to thimerosal. Verstraeten reported that these shocking signals prompted him to review, for the first time, the published medical literature, where he confirmed the alarming toxicity of mercury to cause these injuries was biologically plausible. In 2017, Robert De Niro and I hosted a packed press conference at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. We offered $100,000 to anyone who could point to such a study. The prestigious group of scientists, including UCLA Fielding School Emeritus Professor of Epidemiology and Statistics, Dr. Sander Greenland, toxicologist and past director of Environmental Toxicology Program at the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, Dr. George Lucier, and Dr. Bruce Lamphier of Simon Fraser University and British Columbia Children's Hospital agreed to judge the study. There were no takers. In 2001, the Institute of Medicine recommended thimerosal's removal from all pediatric vaccines. In accordance with the IOM recommendation, and manufacturers removed thimerosal from children's vaccines. HIB, hepatitis B, DTP, except multi-dose flu vaccines in the United States beginning in 2001. Japan and European governments had already dramatically reduced mercury levels in their vaccines as early as 1993. The European and U.S. bans left pharma struggling to unload stocks and find new ways to monetize stranded assets. The hundreds of millions in production facilities committed to mercury-based vaccines. Bill Gates came to farmers' rescue. Gates helped pharmaceutical companies unload their thimerosal inventories by dumping them in developing countries. Merck, with the help of Bill Gates and Gavi, brokered a deal to donate 1 million doses of their thimerosal-containing Recombivax HB hepatitis B vaccine to the Millennium Vaccine Initiative to African countries. The White House hailed Gates' corporate welfare initiative as an unprecedented level of corporate support. In a press release issued March 3, 2000, despite the discontinuance of in Western nations, Bill Gates and the WHO continued to use their power to force African children to submit to a battery of potentially dangerous mercury-laced pediatric vaccines. Strong evidence suggests that African boys with higher testosterone and chronic vitamin D deficiencies are far more vulnerable to vaccine and thimerosal injuries than whites. When it comes to pharma profits, dead and brain-damaged African babies are merely collateral damage. In 2012, Dr. Fauci waxed philosophical when a reporter asked him to describe the example of one of his useful collaborations with Gates. Perhaps he speculated NIAID would work with Gates and Gavi on a project to remove thimerosal from African vaccines. What is used now is thimerosal, which is frowned upon because of concerns of mercury. So Seth Berkley, Gates' Gavi director, and I were talking about finding a preservative for these multi-dose vials without thimerosal, so we no longer would have the baggage associated with it. By baggage, he apparently meant the millions of neurological injured African children. There is no evidence that this particular collaboration survived its stillbirth at a hypothetical reverie. I don't know what that word is. 8 years later, Africans are still carrying this toxic baggage. It's crushing, often mortal load. Lethal malaria vaccine experiments. Malaria claims about 655,000 lives annually. Wow. mostly African children aged under 5. In 2010, the Gates Foundation funded with $300 million a Phase 3 trial of GlaxoSmithKline's experimental malaria vaccine, Mosquirix, in 7 African countries aimed at young children because their immune system is still developing. GlaxoSmithKline contributed $500 million. NIAID contributed tens of millions in a battery of grants. Lesser funders included USAID, CDC, and the Wellcome Trust. Gates is heavily invested in GlaxoSmithKline, apparently suspecting the vaccine might be lethal. Gates' team elected not to test it against a placebo. They used instead highly retrogenic meningitis and rabies vaccines that themselves were never tested against a placebo. The meningitis jab was famous for causing alarming numbers of injuries and deaths. The use of retrogenic placebo, a so-called faucebo, is a deliberately fraudulent gimmick that unscrupulous vaccine companies deployed to mask injuries in the study cohort by purposefully including injuries among the placebo cohort. Clinical trials that omit true inert placebos, marketing masquerading as science. Some 151 African infants died in the trial, and 1,048 of the 5,049 babies suffered serious adverse effects in both control and study groups, including paralysis, seizure, and febrile convulsions. Eager to secure the WHO approval necessary to license GlaxoSmithKline's vaccines for global distribution, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation brushed aside the lethal outcomes of these experiments, declaring the trial a mild disappointment, but vowing to press on with the project. Casualties be damned. The efficacy came back lower than we had hoped, but developing a vaccine against a parasite is a very hard thing to do. The trial is continuing, and we look forward to getting more data to help determine whether and how to deploy this vaccine. He demonstrated his resolve in donating an additional $200 million to finance more defective GlaxoSmithKline research. Yeah, need to take a few seconds and update my virus protection here, so. Plus I gotta find my spot again, so bear with me for a few seconds here. Even with Gates' generous grubsteak, must be another snob word, Mark. GRUBSTAKE, grubsteak. GlaxoSmithKline's crooked clinical trial researchers could only muster a feeble claim of 30% efficacy for their infinitesimal jab. Undaunted, Gates rolled out Mosquirix in 2019 as the first malaria vaccine in sub-Saharan Africa. It turned out to be another Genocide for Girls project. According to the Republican Science, Mosquirix efficacy and durability are mediocre. 4 doses offer only 30% protection against severe malaria for no more than 4 years. The biggest concerns, however, are about the vaccine's safety. The BMJ's associate editor, Dr. Peter Doshi, points out, these were at a rate of meningitis in those receiving Mosquirix, 10 times that of those who did not. Increased cerebral malaria cases, and doubling in the risk of death from any cause in girls. Dr. Doshi says WHO's malaria vaccine study represents a serious breach of international ethical standards. The demonstrated risk worried the WHO so much that it retreated from its plan to roll out the vaccine across Africa in favor of a smaller pilot programs in Malawi, Ghana, and Kenya that will administer the vaccine to hundreds of thousands of children instead of the 1 million that BMGF had hoped for. Virologists and academics around the world kept mum about the Gates' Mosquirix deaths. Mosquirix. The play on mosquito. Kept mum about Gates' Mosquirix deaths. Gates' plump purse, his impeccable connections, his power over the virology cartel, and the weakness and needs of African governments once again insulated him from consequences of all these dead children, with the exemption of Dr. Doshi. Lethal meningitis vaccine experiments. In 2010, Gates funded a MenAfriVac campaign in sub-Saharan Africa. Gates's operatives forcefully vaccinated thousands of African children against meningitis, causing approximately 50 to 500 vaccinated children to develop paralysis. Citing additional abuses, South African newspaper declared, "We are guinea pigs for the drug makers." Professor Patrick Bond, a political economist who served in Nelson Mandela's South African government, described Gates's unseemly business philanthropic practices and the agenda of the Gates Foundation as ruthless and immoral. Population and sterilization vaccines. Early 20th century America saw snowballing popularity of eugenics, a racist pseudoscience that aspired to eliminate human beings deemed unfit in favor of the Nordic stereotypes. 27 state governments enshrined elements of the philosophy as official policy by enacting forced sterilizations and segregation laws and marriage restrictions. In 1909, California became the third state to adopt laws requiring sterilization of intellectually challenged Americans. Ultimately, eugenics practitioners coercively sterilized some 60,000 Americans. John D. Rockefeller Jr.'s keen interest in eugenics colored his passion for population control. The oil baron Scott Sion joined the American Eugenics Society and served as trustee of the Bureau of Society of Social Hygiene. The Rockefeller Foundation dispatched hefty donations in the 1920s and early 1930s to hundreds of German researchers, including those conducting Hitler's notorious twin studies at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Anthropology, Human Heredity, and Eugenics in Berlin. The Rockefeller Foundation curtailed donations to Nazi Germany's medical institutions before Pearl Harbor. But Rockefeller's success promoting the eugenics movement had already captivated Adolf Hitler. Now that we know the laws of heredity, Hitler told a fellow Nazi, "It is possible to a large extent to prevent unhealthy and severely handicapped beings from coming into the world. I have studied with interest the laws of several American states concerning prevention of reproduction by people whose progeny would, in all probability, be of no value or be injurious to the social stock, to the racial stock." All right, I'm going to mark my spot here and take the first break, everyone. Let's see. I guess about almost 5 minutes break here. Track 12 of Annie and Rick's music. Whoops. Be right back in about 5 minutes, everyone. We'll be right back. Okay, and welcome back after the break there. I still want to say again that everyone is listener supported, so please hit the donate buttons on all the networks. In the early 1950s, the Rockefeller Foundation conducted fertility studies in India that historian Matthew Connolly characterizes as an example of American social science at its most hubristic. In one of the collaborations with the Harvard School of Public Health and India's Ministry of Health, the Rockefeller Foundation studied 8,000 tribal people in 7 villages in the Kahana section of Punjabi to determine whether contraceptive tablets could dramatically reduce fertility rates. According to Lindsay Magui, the villagers were treated like lab specimens, subjected to monthly questioning but otherwise ignored. Rockefeller's researchers did not initially inform the Punjabis that their pills would prevent women from bearing children. Magui describes the villagers as shocked, dismayed, and resentful to learn that the medication they credulously consumed was intended to render them infertile. Some were incensed by the effort to limit their future progeny. Over the next 2 decades, the Rockefeller Foundation conducted frequent anti-fertility programs in India and elsewhere, earning the growing animosity of physicians, human rights activists, and property specialists who criticized the foundation for focusing the population growth while ignoring the realities of persistent poverty that makes large families so indispensable to India and Africa villagers. Today, Magui adds, the Gates Foundation is pouring money into experimental medical trials that are facing criticism similar to those directed at the Rockefeller Foundation's Kahana study. Like earlier philanthropic foundations, the Gates Foundation has the financial and political clout to intervene in foreign nations with relative impunity, and to remain unfazed when the experiments it finds go awry. Sorry. It really ceases to amaze me why there isn't more vigilantism in today's society. I don't know, it just amazes me. Gates's fetish for reducing population is a family pedigree. His father, Bill Gates Sr., was a prominent corporate lawyer and civil leader in Seattle with a lifelong obsession for population control. Gates Sr. sat on the National Board of Planned Parenthood and a neo-progressive organization funded in 1916 by the racist eugenicist Margaret Sanger to promote birth control and sterilization and to purge human waste and to create a race of thoroughbreds. Sanger said she hoped to purify the gene pool by eliminating the unfit persons with disabilities, preventing such persons from reproducing by surgical sterilization or other means. In 1939, Sanger created and directed the Racist Negro Project, which strategically co-opted black ministers in leadership roles to promote contraceptives to their congregations. Sanger stated in a letter to her eugenics colleague, Clarence Gamble of Procter & Gamble, "We do not want word to get out that we want to exterminate the Negro population, and the minister is a man who can straighten out that idea, if it even occurs to any of their more rebellious members." When I was growing up, my parents were always involved in various volunteer things. Gates told Bill Moyers in 2003, "My dad was the head of Planned Parenthood, and it was very controversial to be involved with it." Overpopulation, Gates's father told Salon in a 2015 interview, was an interest he's had since he was a kid. In 1994, the elder Gates formed the William H. Gates Foundation, the family's first, focused on reproductive and child health in the developing world. Population control was the enduring preoccupation with his son's philanthropy from its inception. By the way, I share Gates's fear that if humanity persists in juxtaposing, another snob word, judiposing, maybe. X must be silent. Judiposing. Exponential population expansion atop linear resource growth. We will all land in a nightmarish Malthusian dystopia. I'm troubled, however, by his apparent comfort in using coercive and mendacious tactics to trick poor people into dangerous and unwanted contraceptive programs. The proven paths of zero population growths are the mitigation of poverty and empowerment of women. Women with alternative career opportunities seldom choose the heavy, hazardous burden of serial maternity. Virtually every nation with a stable middle class has fertility below replacement rates. But Gates's careless public statements and the programs that he habitually funds suggest that Gates has involved himself in sketchy stealth campaigns to sterilize dark-skinned and marginalized women without their informed consent, including the deceptive use of dangerous sterility vaccines. On February 20, 2010, less than 1 month after he famously committed $10 billion to the WHO, Bill Gates suggested in his Innovating to Zero TED Talk in Long Beach, California, that reducing world population growth could be done in part with new vaccines. The world today has 6.8 billion people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we can lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%. Gates' defenders and the Gates publicized fact-checker organizations scoff at critics who interpret literally Gates' 2010 statement that he hoped to use vaccines to reduce population. They explain that Gates intended, by his inartful construct, to suggest that life-saving vaccines will allow more infants to survive to adulthood, thereby reassuring impoverished parents that they need not have so many children. But this hypothesis rests on the sketchy premise that his vaccines reduce child mortality, a proportion that Gates has never demonstrated and that current science does not support. His peculiar choice of words naturally fueled speculation that he has engaged in a premeditated campaign to use vaccines to sterilize women. His questionable antics in promoting anti-infertility drugs and WHO's widespread use of stealth sterility vaccines credibly fuel such sentiments. Depo Provera, A Cruel Irony. Population control has been a central preoccupation of the Gates Foundation since its inception in 1999. Gates' $2.2 billion commitment to the UN Population Fund doubled the size of the Gates Foundation. The same year, he funded with a $20 million contribution the funding of the Johns Hopkins Center for Population. In 2017, the Gates Foundation adopted the goal of administering contraceptives to 214 million people in poor countries. Gates' contraceptive of choice is long-term infertility agent Depo Provera. Population planners have administered Depo Provera primarily in poor and black women in the United States since its inception in 1967. Since its invention in 1967. In the United States, 84% of Depo Provera users are black and 74% are low income. Depo Provera, biggest promoter, Planned Parenthood, specifically targets blacks and Latinos. In its marketing campaigns, UN data demonstrate that Depo Provera is seldom administered to white or affluent women or girls in the United States or Europe. Depo Provera is a powerful poison with a devastating inventory of wretched side effects. Under federal law, the Depo Provera label must bear FDA's most stringent black box warning due to its potential to cause fatal bone loss. Furthermore, women have reported both missing periods and excessive bleeding, blood clots in arms, legs, lungs, and eyes, stroke, weight gain, ectopic pregnancy, depression, hair loss, decreased libido, and permanent infertility. Some studies have associated Depo Provera with dramatic increases, 200% in breast cancer risk. The FDA warns women not to take Depo Provera for longer than 2 years, but Gates' program prescribes at least a 4-year course, or indefinitely, for African women, and goes to great lengths to avoid warning black women about the concoction's many drawbacks. Between 1994 and 2006, the Bill and Melinda Gates teamed with the Rockefeller and Andrew W. Mellon Foundations, the Population Council, and the USAID to fund a seminal family planned experiment administering Depo Provera to approximately 9,000 impoverished women in the town of Navarongo and districts of Ghana. Though USAID's stated underlying principles for family planning were voluntarism and informed choice, it hasn't always worked out that way. A disturbing 2011 expose of the collaboration of the Rebecca Project for Justice, the outsourcing of Tuskegee, non-consensual research in Africa, documented how Gates's researchers lied to the Navarongo women, telling them that they were receiving routine health care and or social observations, never informing them that they were part of a population control experiment. Gates's researchers violated U.S. research laws by failing to administer informed consent forms to the women they injected with the Depo Provera. Nor did they obtain institutional review board approval for a human experiment that lasted an extraordinarily 6 years. Under direction of Gates's PIs, Dr. James Phillips and his fellow Pfizer and Gates PIs deliberately fabricated and falsified research data to fraudulently prove Depo Provera safe. Based on such proofs, in 2011, Gates expanded his project to fund the Depo Provera programs for some 12 million women across sub-Saharan Africa. That same year, 2011, a study by another prestigious BMGF and NIH-funded research team from Gates's own Washington School of Public Health published an article in Lancet Infectious Diseases, Heffron et al., reporting that African women who used injectable Depo Provera were more likely to acquire HIV/AIDS compared to untreated women. Depo Provera injections doubled a woman's risk of contracting and transmitting HIV. This result was not an enormous surprise. For 24 years, diverse studies have shown that Depo Provera thins the vaginal wall, easing transmission of HIV. Furthermore, the researchers found Depo Provera exacerbates the rates of HIV/AIDS infections to a recipient's sexual partners. Despite her funding from Gates, the study's lead author, Dr. Renee Heffron, and her fellow researchers recommended informing HIV-infected women of Depo Provera's grave risk and to use alternative non-progesterone-based contraceptives. Women should be counseled about potentially increased risk of HIV-1 acquisition and transmission. The confirmation of the risk by his own scientists posed an obvious conundrum for Gates, since it pitted its passion for population control against his avowed commitment to end the spread of HIV in Africa. Population, it turns out, trumps HIV prevention in Bill Gates's catechism. Without offering any scientific research to substantiate their claims, Gates's deputies, a cabal of extreme population control advocates linked to Gates, worked with Pfizer intermediaries to viciously attack Heffron's research findings. The critics include BMGF, Planned Parenthood, the UN, Ronald Gray, and the Gates-funded Johns Hopkins University, James Shelton, of the USAID's Office of Population, and others. Under these fierce attacks by Gates's minions in the medical cartel, Dr. Heffron and her research team courageously stood their ground and retained their professional integrity. The Lancet published Heffron's withering response. Dr. Heffron pointed out that her attackers cited no convincing science, and that the two recent studies by Heffron and the WSPH team capped a quarter century of published medical documenting increased HIV risk among women taking Depo-Provera. To combat this crisis, WHO, by then wearing Bill Gates' boot on its neck, conveyed a group of hand-picked experts, all sworn to secrecy for a door-closed meeting in Geneva on January 31, 2012, to discuss damage control on the Heffron study and the mountain of HIV research that supported her. On February 16, 2012, WHO and its mysterious expert cabal unsurprisingly announced its preordained decision. Women living with HIV/AIDS or at high risk of HIV/AIDS can safely use Depo-Provera. More lies. I'm going to take a little 10-second break here and get something to drink. Although I could just wait a couple minutes, but I'm going to take a little break anyways. A disturbing 2011 expose. Wait a minute. Betsy Hartman, a longtime reproductive rights advocate, ridiculed WHO's convenient new guidelines. This reversal, despite 25 years of studies citing an increased risk of HIV transmission among women using it, raises question marks whether WHO abandoned caution during an outbreak due to outside encouragement by special interest groups. Hartman was clearly referring to the BMGF. In the wake of the WHO self-serving declaration, Melinda Gates announced in July 2012 a $1 billion contribution as BMGF's share of a $4 billion collaboration with the USAID, the PATH, and Pfizer with the goal of promoting Pfizer's Depo-Provera across sub-Saharan Africa. Pfizer and USAID committed the remaining $3 billion to African contraceptive projects. Outcry and censor from dozens of international women's rights advocates and reproductive health groups greeted Melinda Gates' announcement. According to the detailed report by Jacob Levitch, the real agenda of the Gates Foundation, Mrs. Gates minimized the proven risk of acquiring HIV/AIDS with Depo-Provera by directing the public to contrived 8-page technical statement published by the Gates Foundation supplicants at WHO, ensuring the public that Depo-Provera is safe and all contrary scientific research that linked Depo-Provera to HIV infection was inconclusive. All right, take the break right here, everyone, so mark my spot. And, let's see. Guess I'll be back in about almost 6 minutes with, track 2. Okay, and welcome back, everyone, to the final hour here of the show. I don't know if you're going to see the message or whether you'll hear it there, Andy, but just going to do 2 hours today. Not going to do the Out of Babylon after this hour. Just going to be 2 hours. To quell the growing uproar, Gates funded a WHO study to debunk the HIV Association once and for all. This time he skipped over Heffron to fund a more reliable group of researchers. Environmental lawyers call this sort of biostitutes. Yeah. Biostitutes. Pretty much. On October 21st, 2015, WHO released its investigation, which not surprisingly concluded that there is no evidence of a casual association between DMPA use and incidence of women's risk of HIV acquisition. WHO then issued new guidelines that mirror precisely those recommendations by Pfizer Depo Provera's manufacturer. Some 40 reproductive health groups demanded that WHO's director, Margaret Chan, sideline the new guidelines until Gates' study could survive a rigorous re-evaluation process. WHO ignored these pleas. The centerpiece for the Gates $4 billion caper is a self-injection syringe, a plastic bubble attached to a needle for administering Depo Provera. Pfizer creates the gizmo, but Gates is Seattle-based Legate, P-A-T-H, markets it under the new brand name Sayana Press. PATH former director Chris Elias was by then president of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation through PATH. Gates will distribute these devices, costing $1 per 3-month dose to 120 million women in 69 of the world's poorest countries. With distributions that Gates plans to squeeze for those governments, these lucky ladies will pay little or none of the cost. Pfizer, of course, will make a killing. According to the Wall Street Journal's Market Watch, Pfizer could potentially earn approximately $36 billion in sales resulting from an unprecedented Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation investment. $560 million from Bill and Melinda Gates, totaling $3.4 billion with government contributions, that promotes Depo Provera as the optimum contraceptive for women of color and low-income women. Levitch explains that this scheme is a cunning dodge to evade U.S. regulators that require Pfizer's labels include its dire black box warning bearing the words FDA inform every rips FDA. FDA black box warning and osteoporosis, and that the administering clinician inform every recipient that the drug poses life-threatening harm. In the United States, pharmacists can never dispense Depo Provera directly to the patient to self-inject, since the law requires the medical personnel counsel each patient about risk. Ignoring these safeguards in Africa would expose Pfizer to criminal prosecution and thousands of lawsuits under the Alien Tort Claims Act, which could allow aggrieved African women to sue negligent U.S. drug makers in U.S. courts if they suffer injuries as the result of failure to warn. Pfizer's apparent strategy for insulating itself from liability is to use PATH and BMGF as surrogates to market its contraceptive. Furthermore, to promote Depo-Provera's uptake among blacks, PATH makes a series of outlaw, off-label claims that Pfizer could not legally make about the product. PATH claims that Depo-Provera protects against endometrial cancer and uterine fibroids and reduce risk of sickle cell anemia and iron deficiency anemia, diseases that desperately injure blacks. FDA has never approved Depo-Provera for cancer prevention or for any other uses. It is therefore legal for Pfizer to promote these off-label claims, presenting Gates and PATH as intermediaries is apparently also Pfizer's strategy for evading U.S. laws that prohibit off-label claims. Levitch adds, these statements taken in totality are contextually false and designed to specifically circumvent the FDA's black box warnings. If Depo-Provera is genuinely safe and effective contraceptive with only minimal side effects, why then are Gates, Hopkins, USAID, Planned Parenthood, and Pfizer among intermediaries deliberately concealing the plain black letter FDA black box warnings in their effort to minimize and conceal Depo-Provera's life-threatening harm? But bluntly, Gates and his confederates are tricking African women into taking the contraceptive by deceiving them about its safety and lying about its efficacy against diseases that disproportionately harm blacks, something Pfizer executives would go to jail for. Gates' willing partner in this fraud is USAID. USAID's director, Dr. Rajiv Shah, has been a serial conspirator in Gates's many racist flim-flams. For a decade prior to his gig running USAID, Shah worked for Bill Gates' foundation, 2001 to 2010. As a principal fundraiser for the Gavi's World Immunization Programs. Shah candidly acknowledged that BMGF's and PATH's stamp of approval on Depo-Provera serves as a clever strategy for insulating Pfizer from criminal and civil prosecution for violating FDA regulations. Gates' caper aims to artfully remove the FDA's jurisdiction by using PATH as a surrogate and by effectively transferring regulatory authority to the WHO. Somebody sent me a message here on Skype. I wonder what that's about. Oh, okay. It's nothing but a... what's the word I'm looking for? Scam. Gonna get rid of it real quick here. Okay, sorry about that. Put bluntly, Gates and his confederates are tricking. I done read that already. The Rebecca Project, Ford Justice characterizes Gates' African project as a family planning strategy that unethically targets women of color to prohibit births of beautiful black children by not informing mothers of Depo Provera's deadly risk as mandated under U.S. laws, regulations, thus denying a woman of color their inalienable right to choose and access safe reproductive health. Jeez. Depo Provera came honestly to its notoriety as a tool of choice for racist eugenicists. Israel banned Depo Provera in 2013, following a scandal in which government health workers, seeking to radically reduce the number of black births, were targeting African Jews with Depo Provera. Sharona Elihu Chai, a lawyer for the Association of Civil Rights in Israel, condemned the government policy of preventing black Israelis from reproducing. Findings from investigators into the use of Depo Provera are extremely worrisome, rising concerns of harmful health policies with racist implications and violating of medical ethics. In 2002, India banned this dangerous drug from all family welfare programs. After a similar scandal, government officials were targeting lower caste Indians. Many other nations, including Bahrain, Israel, Jordan, Kuwait, Qatar, and Saudi Arabia, prohibit the use of Depo Provera on their nationals. European countries largely restrict the use of Depo Provera and require full disclosure of risk for women and informed consent prior to its use. Gates said USAID have taken advantage of political disorganization in Pakistan to administer self-inject Depo Provera to Muslim women. In contrast to its U.S. counterpart, USAID, the Swedish International Development Authority, does not fund, purchase, or provide Depo Provera for Swedish-assisted projects in developing countries. Sterility vaccines, chemical castrations. Gates' defenders ridicule as conspiracy theory the suggestion that Gates or any reputable public health authority would use life-saving vaccines as a stealth vehicle for surreptitiously rendering women infertile. But one of Gates' earliest philanthropic undertakings was in 2002 project to administer tetanus vaccines to poor women in 57 countries. For reasons we are about to discover, critics credibly suggest that these vaccines may have been secretly laced with the formula that the Rockefeller Foundation developed to sterilize women against their will. On November 6, 2014, 4 years after Gates' pledge at the TED Talk to use vaccines to lower birth rates, medical researchers and doctors associated with the Kenya Conference at Catholic Bishops, KCCB, and the Kenya Catholic Health Commission accused WHO and UNICEF and Gavi of secretly conducting a mass sterilization program against Kenyan women under the veil of eradicating tetanus disease. The Washington Post reported similar charges by the Kenya Catholic Doctors Association. The Catholic doctors became suspicious due to WHO's glaring departures from the usual tetanus vaccine protocols. Normally, a single tetanus vaccine provides a decade of immunity. Since men and women are equally susceptible. Both sexes routinely get the vaccine, but WHO instructed Kenyan doctors to give the vaccine in 5 administrations, 6 months apart, and only to girls of childbearing years. The defense that the WHO intended only to target maternal and neonatal tetanus seems odd in view that the fact that males are about as likely as females to be exposed to bacterium, which is found in the soil everywhere there are animals, observed in a 2011 peer-reviewed study of the controversy. The Catholic doctors also noticed under unusual features of the campaign, for starters, WHO suspiciously initiated its jab campaign not from a hospital or medical center or any of the estimated 60 local vaccination facilities, but distributed shots from a luxurious New Stanley Hotel in Nairobi. An exclusive resort out of reach to most physicians or public health officials. At considerable cost, a police escort accompanied the shots to vaccination sites, where police officers strictly supervised their handling by nursing staff and required clinicians to return each empty vial to WHO officials at Nairobi's only 5-star hotel under the watchful eyes of armed officers. 4 years later, in October 2019, the Kenyan Catholic Doctors Association accused UNICEF and Gavi and the WHO of rendering millions of women and girls barren. The doctors had by then produced clinical analysis of vaccines verifying their allegations. 3 independent Nairobi-accredited biochemistry laboratories tested samples of a WHO tetanus vaccine, finding human chorionic gonadobatrin, HCG. That's what I'm going to call it from now on. I'm not going to try to pronounce those two words anymore. Where none should have been present. In October 2014, Catholic doctors obtained 6 additional vials and tested them in 6 accredited laboratories, finding HCG in half of those samples. In 2019, a group of independent researchers from Kenya and Great Britain, led by universities of British Columbia neurologist Dr. Christopher Shaw, studied the charges and concluded that the Kenya anti-tetanus campaign was reasonably called into question by the Kenya Catholic Doctors Association as a front for population growth reduction. The medical researchers characterized the WHO program an ethical breach of the obligation on the side of the WHO who obtained informal consent from those Kenya girls and women. Catholic medical personnel made similar accusations about WHO's tetanus projects in Tanzania, Nicaragua, Mexico, and the Philippines, following indignant denials of all such accusations and obligatory denunciations against its accusers. WHO grudgingly admitted it had been developing the sterile vaccines for decades. WHO nevertheless punished the Kenyan doctors and the community officials who reported the spiked vaccine by canceling contracts for future work. The sordid history of sterility vaccines. It wasn't the first time the Catholic medical authorities accused the WHO of stealth sterilization campaign against African women. As early as November 1993, Catholic publications charged that the WHO was spiking tetanus vaccines to neuter dark-skinned women globally with potential abortifacients. WHO denied the explosive charges. Shaw's research team showed that WHO and Rockefeller Foundation scientists began research on anti-fertility vaccines for birth control as early as 1992 by lacing HCG with tetanus toxoid, which acts as a carrier for the hormone. That year, WHO researchers at a meeting of the U.S. National Academy of Sciences reported their successful creation of a birth control vaccine that diminishes the BHCG, essentially to a successful pregnancy, and causes at least temporary infertility. Subsequent experiments proved that repeated doses could extend fertility indefinitely. By 1976, WHO scientists had successfully conjugated a functional birth control vaccine. The WHO researchers reported triumphantly that their formula could induce abortions in females already pregnant and/or infertility in recipients not yet impregnated. They observed that repeated inoculations prolonged infertility. More recently, in 2017, the WHO researchers were working on more potential infertility vaccines using recombinant DNA. WHO publications explain that the agency's long-range purpose is to reduce population growth in unstable, less developed countries. The Kenya tetanus campaign occurred shortly after Gates made his pledge of $10 billion to the WHO with the stated purpose of reducing population with new vaccines, perhaps to emphasize his commitment to population control. Gates recruited his most influential advisor, Christopher Elias, as president of the Global Development at the Gates Foundation the following year. Prior to that appointment, Dr. Elias was president, CEO of Gates' nonprofit, PATH, which partners with pharmaceutical companies to distribute vaccines to poor countries by persuading rich and poor governments to fork over moolah to multinational drug makers in which Gates is invested. Kind of funny how that works, huh? Okay, I might as well take a break right here. Don't need to mark my spot because it's the beginning of a new page. Let's see. I think a couple small songs. Track 13 and Heaven's Light, Tina's song. So, be back in about 7 minutes, everyone.
heavens light tonight. While we are here still missing you, trapped in these chains of pain. So many we could blame where you are now. My best friend, you can see all clear. You have no pain or fear. But I am still right here, living in a world in a haze of pain and tears. And your loving voice I can no longer hear. My best friend, you are wrapped up in heaven's light tonight. While we are here still missing you, trapped in these chains of pain, we'll never be the same. The night
Okay, and welcome back, everyone. About the last 25 minutes of the show. 20 minutes or so. Elias ran past innovative Siana Press, injectable depot. Provera project designed to end run U.S. safety regulations while reducing fertility of black African women. That brainchild earned Elias and the Klaus Schwab Foundation's Social Entrepreneur of the Year in 2005. The Gates Foundation provided numerous grants to PATH, including one in November 2020, after Elias had moved over to BMGF to support clinical development of COVID-19 vaccines by Chinese manufacturers. Before PATH, Elias had been senior associate in the International Programs Division of the Population Council, with the responsibility of dampening fecundity, F-U-C-U-N-D-I-T-Y. I don't know what that word is. Where does he come up with these words? I think he's inventing words. Throughout Southeast Asia, John D. Rockefeller III founded the Population Council in 1952. At a conference he convened for the high priesthood of population control, including the director of the new Planned Parenthood Federation of America and several well-known eugenicists. Lamenting that modern civilization has reduced the operation of natural selection to saving more weak lives and enabling them to reproduce, resulting in a downward trend in genetic quality. The group agreed to create an organization devoted to the reduction of fertility. While Rockefeller formally launched the council with a grant of $100,000 and served as the first president, the next two council presidents were Frederick Osborne and Frank Notstein, both members of the American Eugenics Society. The NIH and the USAID were among the startup funders, and the U.S. and foreign governments soon became the Council's largest financial backers. The Council does research promoting the use of artificial birth control and abortion in biomedical research to discover and develop new contraceptive drugs and technologies. It collaborated with the Ford Foundation and the International Planned Parenthood Foundation to develop large-scale IUD programs abroad. Despite its own research, doctors warning about acute adverse side effects, later the council played a key role in developing the extremely dangerous hormonal contraceptive implant, Norplant. Historian Donald T. Critchlow wrote that the Population Council cultivated elite connections and avoided public controversy by identifying itself as a neutral scientific organization. Well, thank you. It is another snob word. Exactly. Mark, thank you, Moon Girl. I don't know where he comes up with these words. I swear he's making them up. Dr. Shaw joined the Gates Foundation in 2001 and oversaw its alliance with the Rockefeller Foundation in launching the Alliance for the Green Revolution in Africa. He directed the International Finance Facility for Immunization. The IFFI is a shady agency that finances Bill Gates' global vaccine enterprises in developing nations through a diabolically innovative bond issuance scheme that runs up huge debts in poor countries it finances Gates' self-serving vaccines. Using a sleight of hand, IFFI enriches Gates' pharma partners with. Oh, sorry, got to get rid of somebody. Another scam calling. Okay, gotta find out where I left off at now. The IFFI is a shady agency that finances Bill Gates' global vaccine enterprises in developing nations through diabolically innovative bond assurance scheme that runs up huge debts in poor countries to finance Gates' self-serving vaccines. Using sleight of hand, IFFI enriches Gates' pharma partners with Western financial bonds by passing the cost to future generations in poor countries. Shaw raised $5 billion from this swindle from Gavi. At USAID, his primary responsibility was reorganizing the agency to reflect its new biosecurity direction. Under Obama's 2009 executive order, Shaw left USAID to become president of the Rockefeller Foundation in 2017. Shaw has deep links to the intelligence agencies and the oil and chemical cartels. Shaw serves on both the Trilateral Commission and the Council on Foreign Relations, two globalist organizations that the Rockefeller-Kissinger alliance largely defined. Shaw is a board member of the International Rescue Committee, a nonprofit with long-standing CIA ties. In his 1991 book, Covert Network, Progressives, the International Rescue Committee, and the CIA, University of Massachusetts economics professor Eric Thomas Chester exposes the IRC and the CIA front. Bill Casey, a longtime spy, who, as Ronald Reagan's CIA director, helped manage the Iran-Contra affair in the 1980s, chaired the IRC from 1970 to 71. IRC operates in 40 countries, doing humanitarian aid. Accounting to its current CEO, David Miliband, the former UK Foreign Secretary, Shaw's role on the high-level council is to monitor political and non-health issues related to prevention and preparedness. Imperatives for the potential epidemic of global proportions. Okay, I'm going to take another quick 10-second break here to get something to drink. The U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, conducted a decades-long partnership with the Population Council and cultivated long-term alliances with the Rockefeller Foundation and the WHO, researching the use of fertility controls to reduce world population, especially in sub-Saharan Africa. By 2014, Gates and Elias had a reliable collaborator at the federal program. USAID Director Rajiv Shah, who had prior to winning that appointment worked a decade for the Gates Foundation running Gavi's immunization program for African children. Dr. Shaw joined the Gates Foundation in 2001 and oversees its alliance with the Rockefeller Foundation. Did I read all this already? Seems like I did. In 1974, USAID and WHO collaborated from the creation of Top Secret Kissinger Report. Henry Kissinger, whose patron was Nelson Rockefeller, and whose career was deeply enmeshed with the Rockefeller Foundation, drafted the classified white paper, which became official U.S. policy under President Gerald Ford in 1975. The report, known as the U.S. National Security Studies Memorandum 200. Yes, that's the famous one most of us have seen. Outlined the geopolitical incentives for reducing population growth in less developed countries. LDCs to near zero by reducing fertility, so as to safeguard the economic interest of the United States and other industrialized nations and in imported mineral resources. Yes, of course, it's all about the United States corporations, isn't it? It's all about them. Kissinger observed that the industrialized West was already having to import significant quantities of aluminum, copper, iron, lead, nickel, tin, uranium, zinc, chromium, vanadium, magnesium, phosphorus, potassium, cobalt, manganese, molybdenum, tungsten, titanium, sulfur, nitrogen, petroleum, and natural gas at high cost. I wonder if it might have just been easier just to name the stuff they weren't importing. The Kissinger Report anticipated rising prices as population growth triggered instability in African nations. The high-level U.S. government commitment explains the WHO's monumental commitment to sterility vaccines. Shaw found 150 research publications emanating from WHO on various infertility formulations between 1976 and 2016, with many thousands of citations. In the years 1993 and 1994, WHO launched anti-fertility vaccination campaigns in Nicaragua, Mexico, and Philippines, and Kenya in 1995. In each country, WHO and local government clinicians vaccinated women of childbearing age, telling them that the purpose of the WHO immunizations was to eliminate maternal and neonatal tetanus. A subsequent WHO study of birth control policies, Bryant, acknowledged that WHO's family planning services had involved routinely deceiving the person served, with the sterilization procedures being applied within full consent of the patient. Similarly, in 1992, a study titled Fertility Regulating Vaccines, published by the UN and the WHO Program of Research Training in Human Reproduction, reported cases of abuse in family planning programs dating from the 1970s, including incentives such as women being sterilized without their knowledge, being enrolled in trials of oral contraceptives or injectables without consent, and not being informed of the possible side effects of intrauterine IUD. You could have just said IUD. Intrauterine device, IUD. The office of the WHO report advised their patients against the characterizing their work as anti-fertility measures for population control, observing that milder descriptions like family planning and Planned Parenthood were more palatable for public appetites. Speaking on behalf of the WHO, Bryant admitted, "It is perhaps more conducive to the rights-based approach to implement family planning programs in response to the welfare needs of people and communities rather than in response to international concern of global overpopulation." The targeted regions of the WHO tetanus campaigns are primarily the same developed nations as the Kissinger report targeted. For example, a 2015 news release by Associated Press announced tetanus immunization campaigns to take place in Chad, Kenya, and South Sudan by the end of 2015 and contribute toward eliminating maternal natal tetanus in Pakistan and Sudan in 2016, saving the lives of countless mothers and their newborn babies. The Kenya schedule was identical to the one published for the WHO birth control conjugate of tetanus toxoid linked to BHCG. Five spaced doses of TT vaccine at 6-month intervals, which of course strongly contrasts with the published schedule for authentic tetanus immunization schedules. Rahaj Bill and his Indian jabs. Polio vaccine. Following his seminal meeting with Dr. Fauci in 2000, Gates launched the global polio vaccine campaign, pledging $450 million through BMGF of the $1.2 billion total and promising to eradicate polio by decade's end. Improved nutrition, disease management, and the UNICEF's vaccine program had vanquished polio in India by 2011, meaning that the disease occurred in fewer than 300 people per year. Doctors diagnosed just over 200 new cases in 2012. WHO declared the malady eradicated after its 5-year near absence in 2016. By that year, polio affected only about 2,000 sufferers globally. The last few hundred cases of an epidemic disease are always the most difficult and expensive to prevent. But apparently the glory of claiming the triumph over its total obliteration appealed to Bill Gates as an irrespectable challenge. He vowed against SAGE device to eradicate polio and successfully exhorted rich and poor nations to finance his cause. Even the high-end polio vaccines used in Western nations are linked to injuries and illnesses that dwarf historical harms from polio. A short list of these include the highly contagious SV40 monkey virus that scientists believe is responsible for the explosion of deadly soft tissue cancers in baby boomers and the chimpanzee coryza agent that entered polio vaccines at the Walter Reed Hospital Laboratories in 1955 and caused a devastating pandemic of respiratory syncytial virus, RSV. And the WHO estimates today caused 3 million hospitalizations annually and 60,000 deaths in children under 5 and 14,000 deaths among adults 65 years and older. In order to discourage public discussion of these embarrassing abscesses on its sacred cow, HHS, in 1984, the year Anthony Fauci became director of NIAID, quietly published through an astonishing federal regulation that reflected the agency's institutional culture of paranoia, secrecy, and imperiousness, but not America's democratic values or the U.S. Constitution. Any possible doubts, whether or not well-funded, about the safety of a vaccine cannot be allowed to exist in the view of the need to assure the vaccines will continue to be used to the maximum extent constant with the nation's public health objectives. Fed Register, Volume 49, Number 107. That's a quote. So I'm going to end right there today, folks. My voice is getting a bit haggard. And I have to go do something anyways. So, yeah, thanks for coming out, everyone. I'm not going to have a song for the end. I'm just going to drop the radio. Drop the streams for Annie. I hope she's listening or watching, one or the other. Okay, everyone. Thanks for coming out. See everyone tomorrow with me and Roger.